This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Dylan, I regret to inform you that at this rate we are veering dangerously close to becoming a topical video game podcast. And I don't know.
Oh, no.
I don't know how
whatever
I feel about
will
that.
We do. We were always going against the grain. Although I mean, like talk. I feel like talking about this in a month where Kirby, Elden Ring, or not month, but you know, in a quarter Kirby, Elden Ring, and even Final Fantasy: Strangers of Paradise makes Tunic look like the hipster's pick still.
That's fair, yeah.
Although we already talked about Elden Ring, so.
Yeah, we're fake hipsters. We're just in it for the cred and the clout.
Don't worry, I'll bring back Vagrant Story next week.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Backstage Gaming, dramatic takes on your favorite games. I'm Chris.
And I'm Dylan.
And here we are. We're back again. It is another strangely topical episode for us in that we're talking about a game that is released very frequently. But don't you worry, I've got a needlessly high-minded artsy bullshit take to bring to bear later in the episode.
I'm excited for this.
Yeah. What are we talking about this week, Dylan?
Today we're talking about the game Tunic, released by, let me look up the guy's name because it's been a second.
Yeah, it's another largely one man developed game. Guy Andrew Schuldice. I'm not sure.
What it looks like.
I'm not sure which pronunciation is right.
Schuldice.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Something.
Schuldice is how it reads by so far.
Yeah, but it is an isometric Zelda inspired adventure game with like the barest bit of the sort of Dark Souls gameplay loop thrown in, by which I mean there are save checkpoints that restore your health and magic, but that respawn all the enemies and you have to go back and find your ghost if you die. But really, largely, it is a love letter to old school adventure games in the vein of like, it reminds me of Link to the Past and Link's Awakening, both in sort of equal measure.
It's got a little bit of the art of The Legend of Zelda: The Wind Waker, and by that I mean it's got kind of not a cel-shaded look, but very cartoony aesthetic, and then also a little bit of the Tower of the Gods or Castle in the Sky flavor of ancient magical technology.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really fun. It dropped within the last couple of weeks. And Dylan, you bought it for your birthday. And then we were hanging out on Discord and you were streaming it. And I went, oh, I got to get this.
Every like 3 minutes, I was like, oh, my God, this game's so cool.
Yeah. And so I bought it immediately after watching that. And I legitimately have not stopped thinking about it since. I've only played. I've probably played about 8-ish hours of it, and I'm feeling like I'm probably a little past the halfway point, maybe veering towards 3/4 of the way through the game, assuming they don't bust out any more twists on me. But
game good.
game very good. I give it an IGN 9.7 out of 10. but genuinely, what I think is so interesting is it is some frame of reference. I'm going to try to talk around anything spoilery. I have been very purposefully avoiding looking anything up guidance-wise about the game because I'm having a really fun time figuring it out, which is kind of the whole gimmick of the game. Because, hey, Dylan, what is the unique thing that Tunic has going for it?
Okay, so Tunic has two unique things going for it. The first unique thing is that even though there are signs and I think occasional NPCs that you can talk to, everything is in a like indecipherable language. So like if you've ever played a Zelda game and you've seen the Hylian text, usually you press the A button and the Hylian text is translated into whatever language you're playing the game in. Not so in Tunic. In Tunic, no. the core conceit is that aside from like a scant few words, everything is in fantasy language. And I don't know if there's any kind of cipher used to write the fantasy
I will
language.
Say I did a little bit of looking into it, and I have it. I have avoided doing any further digging because I didn't want to run into anything that would sort of give up the puzzles of the game. But apparently it is translatable. There is some kind of actual language going on underneath this made up script, which is very cool.
I was wondering if like maybe it does the Wind Waker thing where on a new game plus it's fully written out in English.
Ooh, that would be interesting. I don't know. But yeah, that's gimmick one. What's gimmick two? And gimmick two is what has me frothing at the fucking mouth about this
gimmick
game.
Gimmick two is what made me buy this game, like over Death's Door, which was another game I was looking at purchasing. So core conceit number two is there are the way you learn the game's mechanics and the way you figure out the story and the way you learn where to go next and the way you get your dungeon maps, basically everything that you would tangibly think of as diegetic in any other Zelda game, where it's like you got a map, so now you have a map, you got a blank, in this game it is all given to you through the in-game manual, but not in the way that like, oh, you just pull up the in-game manual and it's all there and you just consult it whenever you need to. No, the in-game manual is an actual collectible that you find scattered across the world.
Yeah, you find individual pages of this, like, NES or Super Nintendo-style game manual, the kind of thing that would have been packed with the cartridge back in the 90s or early 2000s.
I think of Game Boy or Game Boy Advance game myself, but yeah, the general...
And like complete with like table of contents and references to like to find out more about this. I like, you know, you're assuming it says this because it's all in this made up script. But it'll be like block of made up script and then parenthetical page 26. And you have to flip through to page 26 if you found page 26 by exploring yet.
And it also leaves you in suspense because of that, because you're like, oh, man, this is going to feel like a plot twist when I get to page 20 and finally figure out what they're hinting at.
And the other incredible thing is like. There is some, and again, I don't want to say there's, like, I'm going to use the shorthand of saying there's sort of a Metroidvania kind of thing here, in that, like, you know, there are doors that you will come to or paths that you will come to that are blocked when you first reach them. And some of those follow the typical Metroidvania or Zelda or, you know, insert adventure game here thing where, like...
Search action.
Yeah, yes, sir. Thank you. Some of them follow the typical search action mechanic where it's like, oh, no, there is actually a tool that you acquire later that you can come back and use here. But some of them, you have the tool, you have the ability to interact with these things from the beginning of the game. You just don't know that you do because you haven't found the page of the manual telling you how to do that, or you haven't, like... use the context clues of the illustrations in the manual to put together like what button inputs you need to use.
See, that is going to drive me crazy because I've been trying to figure out like some stuff of like I know there's got to be some function.
There was one that I one page that I found like just a little after that twist that I mentioned before we started recording, where I was like, oh, I'm not actually near the end game. I found a page shortly after that, and I was like, I could have been doing this the whole time. There's so much in this game that is so, like, creatively put together so that, like, maybe you'll stumble upon some of these things by accident. And the game seems to kind of want you to stumble upon some of these things by accident. And then other things are so, like, once you figure it out, it's like, oh, okay, that is a perfectly reasonable little bit of, like, game design or control or input for a puzzle that I just never would have thought to do without it being told to me. And so the way that the game sort of gates your progression and keeps you moving along the, you know, quote unquote intended path for a first playthrough by gating your access to that information until you find the page that it can put where it wants you to kind of come across it along that intended path is brilliant. And speedruns of this game are going to be insane, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, you're just making me more excited like, to see, like, what the hell you're talking about.
Like, again, I think we can probably keep this episode pretty short because, I want to hype this game up, and I want literally, if any of this sounds interesting, and even if some of it doesn't sound interesting, I want as many people as possible to play this game because it's doing really cool stuff.
I think there's still a demo out. So, yeah, like, you know.
It is on Game Pass. So if you have Xbox or PC Game Pass through the Microsoft Game Store, you can play this game, and I would highly recommend that you do. That's a great way to do it without having to drop the $30 that it is retail right now. I don't want to go too much deeper in, because like that really is sort of the core of the game. It's a Zelda-like where the manual is a collectible. And
there's a part of me that really wants you to spoil to me some of those that like early game tech, because I love finding out shit like that.
The thing is, I don't want to, because I want you to have the same experience that I'm having. Because it, but like,
no, kids
I think,
on the playground, kids conversation on the playground. Well,
I do. I'll chat. We can chat after we're done recording. Okay. I think we can keep this pretty short.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do have a couple other things I want to talk about. One is, I fully accept that part of what I love about this game, and Dylan, I'm sure this is partially hitting you too, is this game feels laser targeted at people like our age to like 10 years older than us.
Yeah, this is for millennials and, you know, maybe probably Gen Xers.
Yeah, like I don't know. I don't think my older brother plays video games much anymore, but like if he does, this is a game for him. He's the guy I inherited my N64 and Ocarina of Time and my NES with Super Mario Bros. 3 and Zelda 1 from him as a kid. And this game is absolutely like the when I first found that in-game manual and pulled it up, and you can like see whenever you pull up the manual, the game pauses and it brings up the page of a manual as if you're holding it up in front of you, and behind it, it turns whatever the screen looked like when you paused into like a faux CRT,
a super
low
fuzzy,
poly like, or 16-bit style recreation of that screen.
It's like you took, it feels like a Genesis or even a Saturn game in presentation, yeah. But like it's been made fuzzier as if you were viewing it through a photo.
Yeah,
off the screen.
The first time I did that, it was like the scene in Ratatouille where the critic eats the bite of the ratatouille and you like zoom into his eye, but instead of a cottage in France, I was sitting in the back of my dad's minivan as an 8-year-old driving home with like an N64 game from the used game shop.
Absolutely.
Flipping through the manual.
It was me and some PS1 game. It might have been Final Fantasy Tactics. It might have been a Tales game from the PS1 era. But like that was kind of a similar wave that I got hit by.
Yeah, like and I don't want to discount that. Like a huge part of why this game is hitting me as hard as it is that nostalgia and the way that they're tapping into that in a really interesting way.
I would say that like, for speaking to my own childhood, and this is something that Tunic helped me remember, the instruction manual, and if I had the player's guide especially, was so instrumental in my experience with video games.
Absolutely it was.
Because I could only play video games on the weekend, like starting in second or third grade. So like usually if I wanted to like think about a game even when I couldn't play it, I would go through the Prima official strategy guides I owned, or the instruction manual, and just like kind of read like some of the lore tidbits, or like look at screenshots and imagine like what point of the game that is.
Yeah. There is something very core to the experience of like getting a new game back when included manuals like this were a thing, that is missing. And it's fascinating to me to think that like there's a pretty sizable number of people who might play this game for whom this is going to be their first time kind of being made aware of this thing. And like
a historical value type of thing.
Like even on top of the level of you're finding these pages, the pages have like notes written on them.
Yes.
And like somebody in the fiction of this game, where the manual is a diegetic thing that the character in the game for the manual is collecting, somebody has written notes in that manual and like tips and tricks and is like trying to decipher the puzzles in the manual. Like there's marginalia. It's
a
wild
used game. It's so good.
And that gets me to my needlessly highfalutin artsy take.
Okay, I think I know where you're going with this, so let's hear it.
this game feels like the latest in a kind of growing movement of, and forgive me, there's not really a better way of wording this, and I'm aware of what I'm about to sound like, but sort of a growing movement of postmodernism in video games.
Oh no, Chris, pull up.
No, but there is something very Brechtian about this game's presentation.
Yes.
The existence of the manual as not just a tool to teach you how to play the game, but as a guide to lead you along the path that the developers instruct within the structure of the game itself, and like making this feeling of nostalgia into a mechanical function of the game. It's incredibly Brecht. It's incredibly like experimental theater. There's a lot of,
you know what this experience, like what the narrative that is playing out in my head is? Like, I feel like I am playing an import copy of some Japanese-only game that never made
it. That is exactly
stateside.
What it feels like.
Yeah, and I am, like,
it's
I
like
can recognize select words.
And you
words.
Somehow got a copy of Mother 3 on the NES in Japanese.
And there are words that I can recognize and pick out. And, like, I am just fluent enough at reading the language that, like, I can kind of scrap my way through it and like just figure everything else out with context clues.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is such a cool feeling to recreate and like package to someone.
Yeah, and like the thing is, this game isn't, at least so far, well, one more little detail, and I don't want to offer spoilers, but later in the game you come to this workshop where there's like chalkboards with like, you know, if things in this made up script written out and formula. And I'm pretty sure one of the chalkboards has a sketch of an NES cartridge on it. As if somebody in the fiction of the game knows that they're in a game. I still don't know. I haven't fully cracked the nut yet. But, like, there's something very, like, self-referential and self-aware and like, avant-garde art about the way that this game is constructed. And it's not to any great end that I've come across yet. It doesn't seem like it's trying to, like, really deliver a message. It's just self-aware in a very interesting artistic way. And like,
yeah,
there's a lot of other games recently that have been doing that. There's a game that I haven't played as much of as I want to, that I really want to get into, that came out last year called Inscription, that is a like roguelike deck builder card game, but it's also a psychological horror game that switches genres and has elements of FMV games. And like,
oh yeah, I've heard of this.
Is very, again, very kind of avant-garde, very Brechtian with the way that it's engaging with itself as a game. And then even something like Hades and the way that Hades uses the sort of roguelike formula as a narrative tool. Or if you're going really mainstream, even the way that God of War 2018 is in active conversation with the other God of War games. There's this growing trend kind of across game development of games that are willing to kind of think about themselves as games and present that in a more active way. And this game feels like another sort of step along that road. And it, like, if nothing else, it has me really curious to see what else is going to come out in the next few years.
It's like where the rabbit hole continues.
Yeah. Because I think it's really cool. And I think that it's, you know, this is a thing that artistic mediums go through. There's been like theater and film and books and all of these different mediums have had the point where things have shifted into like, let's make the artifice visible, and games are just starting to get in. I mean, I'm saying that there have been games that have done stuff like this before, but it feels like more and more are coming out now.
It's becoming a, not just a more commonly accepted thing, but it is being done in ways that feel less, I guess, jarring.
Exactly.
Because when I think about like, you know, Spec Ops The Line or Metal Gear Solid 2, they were very like, you're in a video game. Like, what? Yeah. Here
And the elements, I have not played Metal Gear Solid 2, so I'll have to leave that to you, but like the elements of Spec Off the Line that felt so deep when it came out in, what, 2009, don't feel quite so deep now.
Metal Gear Solid 2 still holds up, but it's definitely, it holds up in the way that, like, well, no, it just holds up, period. But I think it treats the fact that you're in a video game as, like, kind of reality crumpling around you, whereas like Tunic, something like Tunic, treats that as a formality, or not even a formality, but it's just like, it's just the nature of the game. It's part of the texture of the experience. And like from literally like maybe minute five.
Yeah, if that far if into that, it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really great. Oh, one other thing I want to bring up about this game, because I fucking love it. Have you opened up any of the accessibility options, Dylan?
Yes, I have. I have.
Yeah, so I just want to shout this out, because I opened this game and I started playing it. And after I got over my initial like, oh, fuck, I love this, I had this thought of like, I know a bunch of people who would love this, but also a lot of those people aren't into the more challenging aspects of games like this. And like the combat in this game is not easy. It is.
Yeah.
There's some crunch to it.
So Brennan was actually asking me about the difficulty. Unfortunately, I had to tell them that it wasn't on Switch, but
yeah. Hopefully it'll come to Switch. I think it would be a great Switch game.
Yeah. I think they just got to make sure they develop for it. But yeah, no, I told him like, I don't think it's like Hollow Knight difficult, but it's definitely like enemies hit hard, and you do need to have like a certain degree of savviness to do well. But
yeah, I had that thought. I was like, I don't know, like a lot of people, like my wife, for instance, would love this game aesthetically, might bounce off difficulty wise. And so I opened that accessibility menu, and they've got, you know, the sort of what should largely be standard at this point of, you know, they've got a reduced screen shake, reduced motion blur, reduced damage flash, vibration settings, all that kind of stuff for like vision accessibility.
I kept the damage flash off, because that was kind of rough.
It's pretty rough. But then they also have two difficulty settings. You have one, which is no stamina restriction. In this game, you have a stamina bar like in Dark Souls. It goes down when you dodge or when you block. And there's some other more granular things about like how damage impacts you and how you're able to move when your stamina is below a certain threshold, which is all interesting. But if you're not having fun with that, if you're finding that frustrating, you can just turn that off. And I think that's really cool. And then there's also a no fail mode where you just don't take damage. You still have to go through. The enemies are still going to try to fight you, but they're not going to be able to kill you.
Right.
And I've used no fail mode a couple of times. Like
I have too.
I got to like, the first boss and he put me in the dumpster a few times, but I was having fun and like, okay, no, I was like, okay, no, I can do this. And so I kind of bashed my head against him for a little bit longer and did do it the standard way. And then I got to the second boss. And I don't remember if it was a case of like, I don't think I can do this, or if I just like wasn't in the mood, because I was just like, I want to get past this and I want to see what's up. But like I gave him, you know, three or four tries and was like, you know what? Nah. And I just turned on no fail mode and got through it that way so I could continue on and see what was left in the story. And like, I'd recommend that. There's some points of this game where it gets really hard, and I don't think the combat is really what you should be here
for.
The combat's
not the main draw.
It's fun.
And the
it feels good. It's not a bad combat system by any stretch, but it's also
it's not as snappy as some of my favorite Zelda games. It kind of leans into it being kind of Souls-like, and while that has its fans, I think for a Zelda, like I enjoy something a little snappier, a little more versatility, at least than what I've gotten so far.
Yeah, and like.
So the ability to kind of trivialize the combats, you know, if trivialize,
it's really
the
rewarding.
Word I
and
like
there,
to use,
there's a point I got to fairly there. Recently where I turned it on, and I'm glad I did, because I would have been. There's a section with invisible enemies that you can make visible once you figure out what their patterns are and know where to try to hit them after they hit you. But boy, howdy, figuring that out would have taken me probably three or four deaths if I hadn't had no fail mode on, and I would have been. Frustrated. So I think it's a great system. And
I'm
again,
trying to learn
it doesn't
parry timings with it on, because like God, is that a long window before
it's so
you can actually
long.
Parry something. I hope there's a shield upgrade.
Yeah, it is an interesting game. I would highly recommend playing it again, like with the difficulty settings and the accessibility options they have. I can genuinely recommend it to anyone if you like. If you have an affinity for old school adventure games, or if you've like never seen a game like this, you know, if you have Game Pass, it's included in Game Pass. You can give it a try that way for, you know, literally zero risk. And I think we should wrap up because I don't want to spoil anything, and I just want to kind of leave it there. Though I'm happy to talk with you after we're done recording if you want to chat shop.
Let's go. I need some tips and tricks.
So yeah, again, weird of us to do an entire episode on just one game, but hey, I got to bust out the word Brechtian in there, so I'd say we're still on brand.
Too long.
Thank you so much for listening to Backstage Gaming. I hope you enjoyed. I hope you go check out Tunic. Let us know on Twitter. Dylan will tell you about socials in a second. If there's any other kind of hidden gem retro style games like this that do something interesting that we should check out. I'm always, this is one of my favorite genres of games, and I love thoughtfully made ones like this. So hit us up with that. Also, you can find us on our website, bsgpod.com. If you want to get in touch with us directly, there's a contact form there. There's also info about us and the show. And wherever you're listening to us, whether you're getting us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Store, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever podcatcher, if they let you leave ratings or reviews or hit that subscribe button, maybe do that. That stuff's all really good for analytics, and that helps us grow and gain an audience, and that means a lot to us. So consider doing that as well. Hey, Dylan, what about social media?
Yeah, if you want to hit us up on social media, you can find us on Facebook and on Twitter, where our handle is at @BSG_cast. Also, if you want to talk about the games, if you want to talk about Tunic, if you want to, you know, engage with anything you heard on this episode in any way, we would love it if you use that hashtag BSGpod for the reasons Chris has already mentioned. Also, huge thanks to our friend Brendan French for the key art he has provided our show. If you dig his stuff, you might dig more of it if you go to his Squarespace at brennan-french.squarespace.com. That is brennen-french.squarespace.com. You can also find him on instagram.com/BrennanFrenchArts or on his Twitter @Brennan_French.
You should also go check out our friend BioQuery. He's the musician behind our theme song, Dotsound Radio Volume 1 Instrumentality. If you like that, you can find more of his music by going to soundcloud.com/BioQuery. That's soundcloud.com/BioQuery. Or by searching for BioQuery on Spotify. Thank you, as always, to the HP Video Game Podcast Network for having us on the network. There's tons of other podcasts about video games included there, so if you like us, you'll probably like some of those too. You can find those by going to Twitter and searching for @HPVGPodNetwork. And thank you, as always, to our patrons at patreon.com/BSGPod for supporting the show, for making it so that we're not losing money on things like web hosting fees. It really does mean the world to us that we have the support that we do and that we're able to keep doing this without breaking the bank. And if you like the show and want to show it support in a very direct way, Patreon is a great way to do that. And I think that'll do it for us for this week. Thank you so much for listening and indulging as I just kind of gushed about the game that has taken over all of my gray matter for the last 72 hours. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.